Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
About the presidential election will be the same people who like are like, what's a midterm? That's a thing? Which are, and they're far more important because they have a lot more impact on what actually happens.
Yeah. Don't blame me. Like, I voted for Kodos.
Yeah, it's like, you want to know why a bunch of Obama's policies that you might have liked to have seen pass didn't pass? Because you skipped voting in the midterm election, and the Senate is... all of our congressmen are disgusting, ancient old men who still go, women, what's that?
Yeah, exactly.
What is that thing? And you know why? Because you didn't vote against them, because you didn't bother voting in the midterm.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. If Donald Trump takes office and you're afraid of that, vote in the midterm and don't give him any support. And then, problem solved.
Yeah. As I say, I'm just so tired. So tired.
Well, I mean, you did it to yourself.
I did.
No sympathy here.
Yeah. That's what I get for going on Reddit.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome to Game Classy. I am your host, Joe, and with me is
always... More like Game Assy.
Yes. And with me, as always, is my co-host, the Iron Man to my Captain America, Steve!
Why am I Iron Man?
Because you're not Captain America.
I'm also not Captain America, but no. I mean, I guess I'm neither.
Yeah.
Can I be...
The Blob?
Can I be Bucky?
You could be Bucky. You could be the Bucky to my Captain America.
Right, that's fine.
You got a metal arm. I've talked about this before on Comic Book Logic. I hate the design of Bucky. I think he's one of the worst design characters of all time.
What, the dude with the metal arm?
Yeah, the metal arm is okay, but it's like the straggly hair and the raccoon eyes and like that stupid mask in front of us. I think it's just so ugly. It's like one of the ugliest design costumes of all time.
Better looking than you.
It's true. He is better looking than me and much more handsome. Yes.
Your design's pretty bad.
I am designed poorly. Oh, Gen X. We do got some stuff to talk about. I got a lot of other crazy stuff, too. You know what I did last night?
Something obnoxious?
No, actually, I went and played laser tag.
Oh, all right.
There's this place in Aurora that it's called iCombat Laser Tag.
Oh, my
and
God.
And you actually... Yeah.
The story's now getting worse.
No, it's... But instead of, like, the pew-pew laser guns that you get, like, you used to get, like, with the chest plate and
like
everything.
Laser like, Quest, yeah.
Yeah, like Laser Quest. Oh, I love Laser Quest.
Yeah.
You have the big smoke fog and everything's, like, carpeted with, like, that purple carpet.
Yeah, and you run under their bases and you shoot the bases. And you get points.
Steve needed a kiss.
That's
not
true.
From me. But
no,
maybe later.
Yeah, maybe later.
You run around, you shoot the bases. This place, the guns are like police training, like, or military training weapons that are modified to shoot like lasers.
Oh, God.
And the nice thing is that they feel
this really sounds like one of those places where like those like wannabe like,
oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
but we actually rented it out for a bachelor party. You know, we had like 14 guys, so we got to play two teams of seven.
I just imagine like four skinny nerds together just be like, hoorah, Marines! Pew, pew, pew.
Well, I was talking with, I've been there before, and I was talking with the guy because I was, you know, just shooting the shit before the game started. And I'm like, so do you get guys in here who are like really into this? And he's like, oh yeah, hand signals and everything.
God,
like,
damn it.
I'm like, and the place is not like a standard, like the standard laser tag place has like these ramps made of plywood that are carpeted.
And there's the black light.
And the black light, yeah.
And then, of course, the.
You bring back memories and crappy pizza up front. Oh,
yep.
That's so good. But the, no, this place is like.
And not Pepsi, not Coke, but RC.
Well, this place had RC.
See?
Yeah.
RC is the stalwart companion to all laser tag and mini golf emporiums.
Is that like a, you think that's like a Chicagoland thing, or is that like a.
Royal Crown? No, that's everywhere.
I know, but I mean, like, always having Royal Crown at like the crappy places.
Oh.
Like, I think that might be like a Chicagoland
I don't
thing.
Know. I mean, I've never done like mini golf or laser tag outside of Chicagoland.
That's what I'm saying. I've never done
I can't say.
Yeah.
I did do mini golf in Florida, but it was at a Disney mini golf thing. So it was, you know.
Well, there you go. Any of our U.S. listeners who are around, I would say U.S. just because it's probably.
I doubt RC is in. Even though it is the Royal Crown Cola, I don't think it's in other countries.
Yeah. But the so if you're in the U.S., if you go to like a mini golf place, do they have RC? Like, specifically the RC on the fountain soda. So you're like, and you're like all these other, like what would, not, like Mr. Pibb and stuff like that.
I like Mr. Pibb.
Well, yeah, a lot of people like Mr. Pibb. I like Royal Crown,
they
too.
They call him Mr. Pibb.
but this place is not, like with the ramps and the carpet and the black light. It's got, like, it's decorated like a, I guess, like a haunted house. So you're like going through like a haunted house, you know, combat fighting, whatever you want to call it. But the place is insane, and it's a lot of fun to play, because especially because it's like, it's a non-standard laser tag, so you feel the rooms are a lot bigger, and sometimes they're a lot more enclosed. But it's fun. And my I started off, I got slaughtered in the first round. Just I think my kill death ratio was like 8-2.
It's because you weren't doing the hand signals.
It's because I wasn't. But then I was just like, I was like, screw it! I'm not achieving any objectives. I'm just gonna sit in one point, and I'm just gonna shoot everyone that comes by me. And then my kill death ratio was like 14 kills to one death. Yeah, I felt very good.
Now you know why people camp in first person shooters.
Exactly.
You can't get shot if you aren't running out in the middle of the map.
There you go. No, but they do like scenarios, like you have to go get the objective and bring it back to the base and stuff like that, or like you have to camp at the objective, things like that. It's, you know, it's fun, whatever. I can't complain. I would recommend it if you're in the Chicagoland area. Go to the iCombat Laser Tag. It's like $30 for, I think, an hour and a half of play, or like an hour 15 of play. And it's unlimited ammo because the guns have like cartridges, like CO2 cartridges in it. So that when you run out of CO2, you actually have to go and get a refill. Like, and they, you know, it's inside the clip. Mm-hmm. For the gun, so you have the pop
magazine.
The clip. Yeah, whatever. I'm not a gun guy. Magazine clip, the blazugi. I don't know what it's called.
And the blazugi.
Who cares? I'm not running around with a gun. I know that like Dave Max is like crushing his like iPhone as he's listening to this.
Well, perhaps he really appreciated that I corrected you.
Yeah, he probably did. He's like, he's crushing it, and then all of a sudden he like leads off of it. It's like, all right. But yeah, it's, and you get unlimited ammo and you run around and they replace it and you get the, and it kicks back when you shoot too. That's kind of fun too.
I mean, so probably kicks because of the CO2.
Well, exactly. Yeah. That's the way they charge it up with the CO2. And, it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I would think that our listeners would enjoy that place too, you know, cause they probably have that weird paramilitary feel to it. Like, I want to be a soldier.
Yeah, I don't really get it.
No, I don't get it either. I'm just like, yeah, this is kind of fun because I'm running around shooting guns, you know, laser guns. Pew, 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 pew. And they have like these, like, when you're running through it, they have these, like, trigger plates that if you step on it, like, all of a sudden, like, air will blast in your face or a siren will go off. It's nuts. It's pretty fun. But highly recommend it. I also wanted to give an update about Half-Price Books. You remember how his last episode I was bitching and moaning about mm-hmm. them super upping their prices?
Mm-hmm.
Just went back today, yesterday, and their prices were actually reduced on those, and they were put back on the shelf and not in that super glass case with out of print put on all the labels. I'm like, good. Fuck you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, I had a comment from a listener, Tom, who I game with regularly. He wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
He wanted to know about the One Ring role-playing game.
Oh, what about it?
He just wanted to know if it's worth it.
Oh, if you are into Tolkien and storytelling, it's great.
Yeah.
It is a very unique game. It's not structured like D&D or anything along those lines. It's very based on the story, and the way the game is structured is it's structured like a Tolkien story.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening in between The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
That's the time frame it's in. It's very precise on like that time frame, so like it only covers stuff that's happening there. There's a lot. I mean, it's, you know, it's tons of many years between those two events. But the way the game works is you have like a quest phase, which is you and the party going and doing their adventure. And the adventures almost always involve travel. You know, you go from here
yeah.
to here.
As Kevin Smith so eloquently pointed out in Clerks 2.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of The Lord of the Rings is, you know, like, they are traveling. They don't go, like...
Yeah.
The journey is a really, you know, important part of the story. And then after the quest is over, you have... I can't remember what they call the second part, but you have, like, you basically have downtime. And what your character does in downtime is just as important as what they do during their quest. And there's like a whole different, you know, like, so your dwarf, say you're on the quest to like regain your family's honor. And then like you go and complete the quest and then you come back and then it's like your family honor is returned. So like what happens after that? You do that without like the group separates. It's done really, really. It's cool. It's very neat. I'd say it's definitely challenging as far as role-playing games go, because it's not a game where you're like, I'm going to hit this with my sword. Like,
okay.
It is not that kind of game. If you're looking for that style in Tolkien universe, I would suggest MERP or The Decipher, Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
If you're into more of like a story-based, you know, really descriptive, and you have a lot of very good, like, they want to be like deep role players, I would recommend The One Ring. I think it's great, and the books are all beautiful. Like, they're worth collecting alone. Like, if you're not, if you don't care about playing the game, like, just reading it, like, the background is awesome. Like, they're working with the Tolkien estate. Like, everything is official. Like, they have to approve every supplement before they release it, so it's all, you know, completely official.
Oh, that's cool.
Backed by, you know, like, Tolkien, and it's really cool. It's got, like, you know, it's like what happens, like, what's going on with Lake Town, because, you know the story of what happens with Lake Town and Smaug and, like, all this stuff. But what happens with Lake Town while, like, before the Lord of the Rings story? You know, it has, like, how their, like, political system changes and, like, what, you know, what Bard does and that kind of stuff, which is cool. Like, it's just an amazing, like, chunk of Middle Earth.
Yeah.
And the game's great. I think it's fantastic. I recommend it to everyone who has a group that can do it. But it's hard. It's not, like I said, it will not work if you have a group of munchkins.
Yeah, I think he wants to play it with his son, so I probably...
It'd probably work great.
Well, I mean, his son's younger, so
still probably work great.
Yeah, well,
I actually find that little kids are easier to get into because little kids, they care less. They don't give a fuck about the rules.
Yeah,
like a little kid is more likely to just tell you what their character does rather than look for how their character can do it. And that's little kids are in general like they because they still have that, you know, they have the
sense of wonder.
It's not really the sense of wonder. It's they have the ability to imagine unbound.
Yeah.
Because when you're playing a role playing game as an adult, your senses are all about you. You know, you are playing a game. So a lot of people are more inclined to go, I need to see what, like, how I can do this. Like, I know what I want to do. I want to move this boulder and do this thing. But rather than just going, like, I'm going to do that, and then, like, you know, get excited, and, like, the DM's like, okay, here's how to do it. A lot of people fall into the trap, especially in more rules-heavy systems, of looking at their character sheet.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how they can mechanically apply that. Be like, I'm going to use my rocksmithing skill, and my strength is 20, so I'm gonna do that, and I'm gonna do it this way mechanically, and they'll like roll a dice. So you're more likely to actually have a younger kid give you the just like, I'm gonna do this, and you could be like, great, and then you show them how to, you know, use the, like, you show them how to resolve the task, not the mechanics behind it.
Oh yeah.
So like I think it would be great to play with a kid. The dice system is really cool too. You your character, like, there's like a doom mechanic.
Ooh.
Where like it's basically evil. Like the evil gets like generates bigger, and like you're as like the session goes on, like that like goes up higher based on your like the party's dice rolls, and then like there's a penalty that like it comes out. It's like, you know, the doom like comes down like the hammer. It's cool. It's very good. I have not played it, full disclosure. I've read the rules. It was a while ago. I think it was like a year and a half ago. I was really reading them. But I would love to play it. But it's like, it's a game that I don't know anyone. And I know some pretty decent role players. And I know no one who I would play that game with. I think it's probably ideal for a convention game. I think it's might be the best convention RPG there is, because if you're playing, because
who put it out?
It's by Cubicle 7.
Oh, okay.
The same guys who make the Doctor Who RPG. The thing that's great about it, and why I say it's a convention RPG, is because I think it's a game that behooves very well for people who really want to participate in the game. And if you have a group of people who all know each other, there's always that like table talk, which is fine. But I think the less you know each other, I think the better you're going to do with, like, as a group in that game, simply because people are going to be there, they're going to be invested, and they're going to want to play the game rather than talk about whatever, or, you know, dick around on their phones, or, you know, it'll just work better that way.
He was talking about that, and you know what it made me think of, for some odd reason, I don't know why, but it was the Middle Earth CCG from, like, the 1990s. You remember that game?
Oh, the one with the back that has the ISR on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I played that game. The game was great.
I remember, because I was... It was about 95. I really hadn't read, like, I think I'd read The Hobbit at that point. Mm. I didn't even really understand. And I remember the guy who was running my local game store. I think his name was Lynn. I don't know why that came back to me. But he was, because I was really into the Decipher Star Wars game at that time. I think it was like 95, 96. And he was like, oh, this game's out, and it's like a really great rules. And it's called, you know, Middle Earth. I think that's what it's called, right?
Shit. I think it's Shadows of something. I don't know.
I think it's Middle Earth collectible card game.
It might be that. Yeah. I just remember. I bought it and I had it, yeah. And the cards were awesome. They had the black back with the Eye of Sauron. Like, they look fucking sick.
Well, yeah. Well, I had not read the Lord of the Rings by that at that point. I think I was like 15 or 16 at the time, and I remember he gave it and I bought a pack of I bought a starter deck and I opened it up and I was playing and I was looking at the cards and everything and I'm like, wait a second, Hobbits. Is this like The Hobbit? Is this have to deal with The Hobbit? And he's like, yeah, you idiot. It's Lord of the Rings. And I was like, oh, okay.
I know what that is.
I kind of, because I remember my parents had a nice hardbound Lord of the Rings set at the house. So that's what it got me to read the book, was the collectible card game. I remember going through it and I was just like, what's a ring wraith? What the hell is all this stuff? This isn't in The Hobbit. But yeah, it was like as a young kid going through it, I remember seeing that card game. It was actually really nice. Like, all the artwork on it was really nice because it was all like drawn, of course.
Yeah.
It was like all really
all great hand drawn art.
Yeah. And the Eye of Sauron. And it wasn't like the Eye of Sauron from the movies. It was like a big, like, U.
It's like a big red eye.
Yeah, but it had like a U like underneath it. Like, it was like the
top
of the
tower. Well, it looks like an eye, not an eye of flame.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like, it, you know, thinking back to it, I was like, God, how would I even know that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Decipher movie based Lord of the Rings card game was also great.
I don't know. I never played that
super
one.
Super good. It was.
Well, Decipher was a great company.
I would actually say that it is Decipher's best card game.
Is Decipher even still around?
Sort of. They're like a.
They probably got bought by someone.
No, they exist, but I don't know what they're doing. The last thing they were doing was Fight Club. I don't know what they've done since then, because like, they don't have any of their property. Like, they lost all their license because they were a company based entirely on licensing, and they obviously lost Star Wars to Wizards of the Coast, and then Star Trek they just lost. They didn't lose to another company. They just lost. Paramount took the rights back, and then Lord of the Rings, their rights expired with New Line. So that was one of the things that sucked, is that game was super successful.
Yeah,
that card game, and the only reason it died is because they were not legally allowed to make any more cards. It was just like, yep, done. And the game was hot. It was a very successful game. Super fun. It was a great game. Like, one of the best card games I think I've ever played, to be honest. It's super fucking good.
Wait, which card game?
The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, the Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
It was super good. You know, some people complained about, for me, like, I didn't mind that the game, it was all movie stills. Like,
yeah.
I didn't care about that, but I can see some people like having a complaint about like, oh, it's just, you know, it's pictures. But I mean, the Star Wars game was like that too. So,
yeah, it looks like they haven't done anything, because from here it looks like they've done two games since like they lost everything.
Mm-hmm. I think they do a murder mystery game.
They have Fight Club, which is with a K. It's not.
Yep, it's
not,
Club with a K.
Not that, Tyler Durden.
That game was sold in kilos.
Yeah, and Boy Crazy is another one.
Yeah, Boy Crazy. That one's old as shit.
Yeah, I guess that they just got the rights. They put out the newest set in, I think, 2010, it says here.
It still exists, though.
Yeah. And, it says they're RPGs, that they got the Star Trek role-playing game and the Lord of the Rings role-playing game.
Which are both gone, obviously. Yeah.
I mean, it just sucks, because they had...
I'm actually collecting those.
Yeah, that's what we talked about the last time, right? The Star Trek ones.
Both. Yeah, I'm collecting the Decipher Lord of the Rings and Decipher Star Trek.
Because, man, that even the Decipher Star Trek card game was pretty good, I remember, from back
then. It was cool. They the second edition was much improved.
Yeah.
They did a good job with it.
And I think I've gone on record saying numerous times that I love the Star Wars one.
Yeah, it was Star Wars was good.
It was so good back in the day.
Minus the fact that the like game's optimal strategy became not about Star Wars at all, but...
No, it became sitting on a planet.
Yeah, avoiding as much conflict. You avoid the other person.
As much as possible. Yeah, then you just... You force...
Force drain.
Force drain. But yeah, so good. You know, but that's the thing, is like, so I've read two books recently, and I don't think either of them have any properties based off of them. I could be wrong on either, because I haven't done super deep research into it. But one is Joe Abercrombie's First Law World. He just put out a new book for it called Sharp Ends. And I highly recommend it. I think I told you about it numerous times to read it, or at least listen to the audiobooks, because the audiobooks are really good
on it. Yeah, I think you were telling me about it when you were reading the first one.
Yeah, the First Law, it's like six books, seven books now. The first three is an actual trilogy, The next three are like standalone books, but they're novels. They're not like short stories. And then the last one that just came out is like a collection of all the short stories that he would like put into a book that he wrote.
You're a short story.
Yes. Highly recommend it. It's grimdark fantasy, but with like a really good sense of humor. Like everything.
So not Game of Thrones.
I would make a good comparison to Game of Thrones because of like the political manipulation that goes on. And there's like a lot of like stuff that you don't know that's going on. Like characters really hide their motivation, but it's multi character. So like you follow different characters throughout the books, like, and you follow per chapter is usually like a different character, which works fantastic. Very much of the Game of Thrones style. And it's, a very well fleshed out world to the point where it's like, if he doesn't explain something, you're like, I want to know more about this. Tell me more about this, you know?
Tell me more.
But not in a bad way. You know, it's not like, well, this doesn't make any sense, but this is more like, oh,
it's not omission. It's like, it's just like, oh, it's I don't know how to think.
It's more breadcrumbs. Like, yeah, breadcrumbs, like mystery almost. Yeah,
it's breadcrumbs, not nothing.
Yeah, and it's very RPG-ish in a lot of ways because it's like, there's this land and this land and this land. It's all kind of connected into like a super. It's very well done. And any listener who's listening to this right now, if you like to read fantasy and you've not read anything Joe Abercrombie, you could read that or his. He did a, I think it's called The Shattered Seas. It's another trilogy. It's kind of young adult, but the only difference is it's the same writing style. Except this one has a lot less sex and swearing in it. Like, the first Law series has a ton of swearing, a ton of sex. It's pretty good. I would say it's... Oh, disgusting.
Like, hear that duck?
Yeah. The first Law is like... It's just more like 20-something people. The young adult one is just, you know, 15, 16-year-old. It's pretty good. And the other one is the Expanse books. The Expanse series. Have you watched that show yet?
No.
So I've talked about it on the show before.
I've heard nothing but good things about it. So
it's a fantastic show. It's got Thomas Jane in it. You love Thomas Jane.
I do love Thomas Jane.
Yeah.
I have nothing against it. I haven't seen it. It looks pretty good.
Yeah. The show is like the first third of the first book. So I was like, I didn't know that it was only like a third of the book. So I was like, oh, I'm going to read the book. So that way, you know, I can.
You blitz blast it.
Yeah. Way past it. The first book is like probably three seasons worth of material.
Okay.
Right on that one. So I was like, fuck. Well, whatever. I'm just going to read the rest of the series now just because I've blown so far past it. That's another one that should be an RPG. Hands down. It would make the best science fiction style RPG I've ever seen.
All right.
Because sci-fi RPGs, there's not a ton of them that work.
The best one, I think, is Burning Empire, which is the Burning Wheel sci-fi version.
Yeah.
And I think the reason it's the best is because, like, the universe it's in is kind of generic. It's like there's these weird aliens and there's a war, blah, blah, blah. But the system is Burning Wheel. So you can just take whatever sci-fi universe you want and use the Burning Wheel system.
Yeah, that would probably...
Which is really good, minus combat. That's the only complaint I have about Burning Wheel is I think the combat is miserable.
Yeah, I've never played Burning Wheel.
Burning Wheel is a cool... Burning Wheel is an organic... The character growth in Burning Wheel is organic. So the way it works is when you make a test, so like laser blast or whatever, you roll your laser blast skill and you just like you check, you like make little tick marks when you use a skill successfully or when you don't. And when you fill enough of these tick marks, your skill goes up.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's kind of like your character just gets better at doing what you're doing. So if you're not paying attention and trying to like game it, it's cool because your character grows organically. So you're like, oh, well, I've been fucking shooting the shit out of people, so my laser blaster skill is way higher now.
Yeah.
And like it's just an organic character growth, which is neat. I like the way that the skills improve. It is very weird when you read it, and like trying to explain it is fucking impossible. Like I don't know what it is, but like trying to explain to someone how to play burning games is like you need training to do it.
Sure.
It's cuz like you read it and it's like it reads so fucking convoluted, but when you like see it being played, you're like, "Oh." It's one of those games where, you know, it reads like fucking quantum mechanics.
Is it written by British people?
It is not. It is an independent American author.
I was going to say, usually that's what I find with a lot of British rules.
Yeah. It's very cool. The thing is, it's because the mechanics and the wordings are somewhat convoluted because the game is more like an engine, like it's more like a computer game engine than it is a role playing game, because once you have established the characters, things just work, and like the players keep track of their own shit. So like as they're doing things, their characters are getting better, and it's like almost automated. Yeah. So like to make that happen, you need to like program your player to be like, oh, okay, here's how this works.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's a little different than other games, which are more reactive. And you know, it's cool. It's a great generic sci-fi setting, and I think the skill system works. Actually, because Burning Wheel is a fantasy game.
Yeah.
I think that the way that the system works actually behooves a sci-fi setting better, because I think sci-fi games make sense to be more skill-based.
Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, you know, RPGs are generally the domain of sword and sorcery. And it's and I was thinking about this because I was thinking, like, goddamn, there should be an RPG in The Expanse. There needs to be. And I was just like, well, what other sci-fi games, like, could you? And I'm like, well, everything else is based off of property. There's like no Dungeons and Dragons for sci-fi.
There was Eternity. Yeah, that one was a generic. It had a world, but it was also generic.
Yeah,
that was the last one I can think of, and that was made by Wizards sci-fi RPG in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, like, seriously, the Expanse like setting is so beautiful because it only takes place in our solar system. There's no, like, I'm going to get in hyperspace and fly off to planet Alpha Centauri. No, there's none of that. So it's all just Earth, Mars, like the moons of the gas giants and the asteroid belt.
Sounds like Gundam. Yeah.
Except there's no giant robots that are dumb and defy the law of physics.
Dude, they can defy all the laws of physics they want when they're in space, bae.
Yeah. The series and the show is very realistic physics, but with like slight sci-fi twists to them. So like, well, it would take 19 weeks to get from, or 19 months to get from Earth to Mars. Well, in this one, there's a engine that's invented that cuts that in like a third. So there's still travel time in it, but there's not like ridiculous travel time. So they can make the stuff happen a lot farther. There's three factions. There's Earth, United Nations Alliance. Mars is its own like faction, like its breakaway faction. And then there's the OPA, the Outer Planetary Alliance, which are all these people who grew up in outer space. So like their bodies are all like long and distorted because they never got like proper gravity. Like everything spins. So the gravity exists on space stations, but it's not quite Earth. So people are taller. They have weaker bones, or, and all the combat that they talk about there is all zero G combat. It's so perfectly designed for an RPG.
It sounds cool for someone who wants a realistic setting. Yeah. But I think a lot of people who are interested in sci-fi RPGs don't want that.
Yeah.
They want fucking Star Wars and fucking laser swords and magic.
Yeah, I mean, I would...
Or, like, tech that's so far advanced, you know, like Gundams and starships.
Yeah.
And, you know, hyperdrives and warp drives and laser blasters, teleporters.
It's so... And there's only... Well, I don't want to give it away in case people want to watch the show, but there are, like, some sci-fi things that happen that are pretty cool, and they would fit so well into an RPG.
It sounds like it's a hard science fiction. So, like, it can work for RPGs, just like Alien. Alien's a hard science fiction.
That's
great. I mean, hard science fiction is awesome, and it definitely has a place, but I think just like how you said RPGs are more the purview of sword and sorcery, I think sci-fi RPGs are more the purview of, like, fantastic sci-fi, like the Ray Bradbury, like, everything is ridiculous, like, you know,
quantum drives,
right?
And
yeah,
then,
it's like we've invented a quantum drive.
Yeah,
you know,
this is more like all the weapons are still like, it's kind of like Battlestar Galactica with all the weapons are like actual slug throwers.
Yeah, it's like bullets.
Yeah,
because I think one of the reasons that a realistic sci-fi game wouldn't appeal to me is because I feel like I would be getting something wrong. And like, and it's just kind of like, you know, it's like,
watch the, I really recommend that you watch the show.
It sounds great.
Or read the audiobook.
I love
the first
hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like hard sci-fi is awesome. Just the, I think for like, to gamify it, I think it's probably not as fun. Cause you know what happens when you make a game out of hard sci-fi, you get EVE Online.
Oh, but people love EVE.
You know what? People do. It has the most dedicated, it's small. I think there's like 250,000 players or so.
I thought there was more than that.
I don't think so. There might be. I haven't kept up, but I mean,
the way that it's portrayed in the media makes me feel like it's a much bigger fan base.
Well, you know why? It's because the players who are playing it never stop. Like, they have just been playing that game for forever. And the reason it like it's big in the media is because that game is the only game that has literal financial damage and collapse when, like, wars happen.
Oh, my God. Some of the stories... Like, I love reading about EVE Online.
The EVE stories are the best.
They're fan... And, like... Even, like, when you watch the live unfolding of it, you're still kind of like, I have no idea what's going on, but this is awesome.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's just, it is the most exciting, boring game ever made.
And I've tried playing it, too, and I'm like, this game is miserable to play.
Fucking trying to fight another ship, and your ship is just like, oh, my God. It's like, it's so bad. It's just like, you click, 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 and your ship's just flying around by itself. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But you know what I ended up doing when I was playing EVE? I ended up just sitting in a base, just being a stockbroker. I was just like, ooh, yeah, I'm gonna trade this, and like I'd fly somewhere and be like, oh wait, I know, I can get that chemical at that other base for like half that price. So then like I fucking fly my ship over, and it takes real time. So it's like, yeah, your ship will be there in 20 hours. I'm like, okay, gonna log off and like go back the next day. I'm like, ooh, I have arrived. So then like I buy all the chemicals at half price. I'm like, yes, I'm buying this place out. And then I'm like, I'm gonna go fly back to the other one, and then I put it for sale at the local market for double the price that I paid, but still less than it. Just it, and it's, I'm making all this money. I'm like, woo. And then I realized, I'm like, what am I doing?
It's like, I've made over like 1 billion
credits
or quatlus. I made over a billion quatlus, and that translates to a real world equivalent of $6.48.
Some of that shit is big money.
I mean, I love the concept. One of my favorite story is still that spy guy. Like, so they went and they...
Yeah, who destroyed the other guild or corporation.
So they went into there and they stole all of this tech. Like,
it was years of infiltration.
It was so, I'm just like, oh my God, this is insane. And then you're like, oh, this is fantastic. And you're reading about it, and then they're like, the guild of doggy style fucking decided to, and I'm just like, oh, why can't these guys just role play correctly for a change?
Oh, dude, it's ridiculous. Well, the best part is that that war that's currently happening is literally happening like for a real world reason.
I know.
Like, one of the dude who was running that like one empire just like started demanding taxes from like a bigger area, and they're like, no, fuck you, we're not giving you taxes. And he's like, no, you're gonna pay us, or we're gonna come in, we're gonna destroy your ships. And they're like, fuck you. And then all of the other guys like rise up to fight against them. Ridiculous.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, but once again, it's still like, this is the most boring thing in the world to play.
But man, is it awesome to read about. And of course, you know, the best is when you read about, you know, the guys who like...
Aren't they doing like an RPG for EVE? I heard something like they're doing something with EVE now. It's different. Maybe like a movie.
There's a virtual reality dogfighting game coming out for EVE.
Maybe that's what I saw.
It's going to be one of the headset games.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It's just you're in a fucking fighter ship and you're flying around.
I love dogfighting games.
The best was like the one guy who's just like, there was like the pirate guy who's just like, if you don't give us money, we're going to destroy your ship. And he's like, you won't destroy your ship, it's worth so much money. He just like blows up like $500. Just like, boom. It's like, oh, destroyed your ship and all your cargo. And he's like, I only wanted a bit of it. Now nobody gets it. I was like, fuck, that's ridiculous. And then, of course, you know, your pod comes out and they can destroy your pod. So if you don't need, oh man. Yeah, that game is, it is in depth. It is super hard sci-fi. And it is, like I said, the most boring, exciting game ever.
Yeah, I'd much rather just read about it than not take part in it at all. Yeah. But this, yeah, Expanse has that kind of feel to it. A lot of that stuff.
I think if I was like independently wealthy and I had like a room I could turn into like a room that looked like a fucking spaceship, I'd play EVE. I'd just like sit in my chair and just be like, boop, 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 boop,
with like
boop,
the boop, with like boop, super high tech graphics cards, so everything looks fucking amazing. Oh, yeah. Like all the mods. And everything.
And I would do multi monitors, like just like a huge like wall of monitors. So like I could look to the right and be like, oh yeah, that sounds good. And I was like, and I would set up fucking, you know, fucking levers and shit. Yeah, just
you wouldn't do that. You'd pay someone to do that.
Obviously, yeah. I'm an exorbitantly wealthy person. I wouldn't do my own work.
No. You call up Pat and be like, Pat, I need you to come here and do this. And
give me a robot.
He would be so excited to do it, too.
Yeah, he would be.
Yeah. And then he'd be like, can I play? And you'd be like, no, never. Go away, peasant.
Yeah, go play on your laptop.
Your laptop.
I have corporate espionage to do.
It'll be like, Cole, you won't see me for 3 days.
Yes, it's got a pressurized chamber. I get out of there, I'm just like, oh, those corporate dealings. You know, the thing that's ridiculous about that game is you could literally just be a CEO.
Yeah.
Like, you could just be like, yeah, I don't do that. Like, I'm a CEO. Like, I sit in this one base and I just talk to people and tell them. And of course, you know, you hire fucking truckers. Like, there's literally truckers. Like, you could just be like, yeah, what do? I haul fucking cargo. Like, I have my friend who is a fucking gunship who travels with me in my giant cargo vessel. I haul freight. And I have a guard. What do we do when we play Eve? We fucking haul freight. Players pay us to move their cargo from one place to another, and they pay us handsomely because we get it there. And then on the other side is you could be a fucking robber where you're just like, I'm going to rob those trucks.
Well, that would be more fun than hauling the trucks.
But see, that hauling trucks would make you more money.
Yeah.
Because you can, because that's the thing, you can, because the way the game works when you get deep is you can travel different routes to get places.
Yeah.
And the way it works is, like, the longest route, the safest one that has patrol ships and, like, guardian, like, NPC guardians will help you, it takes the longest. So, like, it'll be 8 days to get there along this route. But you can take the route that's very risky, that has almost no security, but it'll take you 4 days. So if you want to take the 4-day route, you literally need to have, like, a gunship with you, because, like, someone's going to try and rob you. But you can charge a player more money if you're like, I'll get it there in 4 days, guaranteed. And, like, that's, you know, it's like, okay, well, then I will pay your ridiculous fee. And you and your fucking bro, like, roll and take 4 hours to get there, and you're like, bam, done.
It's so boring. So boring.
It's amazing and boring. Yes.
All right. Getting to some gaming news. We talked, like, a half hour about sort of gaming stuff.
It was all gaming related.
So, it looks like we've won. Age of Sigmar has decided to go with points. How do you feel about that, Steve?
I guess I like it. I mean, like, I said before, the system seemed fine, but it was unplayable because you couldn't play it. Now that they're actually giving the game points, I guess I can't shit on it. I literally cannot shit on it as hard, because I actually did like the simplicity of that system. It's not a block fantasy game by any means, obviously. Yeah. But, like, I thought the game itself wasn't really that bad. I like the simple stat lines. I like the independent rules and the war scrolls. And now that it's going to have points, well, fuck. I guess I can't... my biggest complaint... Like, two biggest complaints. One, no points. And two, the fucking stupid mustache rules.
Like, yeah.
Those two... Like, they, as far as I know, the mustache rules still exist. But if they don't give those models points, then they don't matter.
Well, a lot of those stupid-ass rules were really for the old armies that
Which are getting discontinued anyway.
They're getting discontinued anyway. So, like, I think none of the newer stuff had any of those stupid-ass rules. But, yeah, it's more of, like, how do you feel about Games Workshop's grand experiment of no points utterly collapsing upon itself?
I am not surprised.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, is they didn't even try, because you don't need to use points. Wrath of Kings is a game that has 0 points. Wrath of Kings is a slot system where you get to use 12 infantry, 2 specialists, 1, like, character or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you can swap a specialist for, like, 6 more infantry, or swap 6 infantry for another specialist, whatever. It's not points, but it is still structured.
Yeah, it's a structure.
Having a game
system
with no structure, when people, and it's not even for, like, competitiveness. It's not even like, I want to play this game competitively. It's like,
friendly.
I want to go to a fucking store with my friend and play a game. How the fuck do we do that? Do we just, like, eyeball it? And it's like, oh, yeah, it didn't really work. His fucking shit was way better than mine. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. It's like, it's nonsense.
Yeah, it's so, like, I can't even eyeball it. You know, so that's stupid. That's a fucking worthless waste of a game. Just something. You need some kind of fucking structure.
And that's the thing, too, is that the way that Games Workshop, like, does everything is that a structure system like Wrath of Kings would not work, because everything is so counter wonky and executioner.
Well, they want you to pay more. They want you to buy more models too.
Well, not even. Well, yeah, that. But I mean,
you can't buy more models and expand your army in Wrath of Kings. Like, if you buy everything, you kind of max out.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is that an executioner in no way matches up with, like, a halberdier from an Empire halberdier.
Right.
They're not interchangeable. So, like, a slot system for fantasy would never work.
Right.
Because it's too much effort to actually make things balanced in fantasy. So.
Well, a lot of the Age of Sigmar stuff is really close together. Like, it's a lot closer than before.
Yeah.
So, like, they could have done a slot system for Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, but they would have to discontinue all old, like, nothing would have models.
Yeah, all the old stuff would be gone, which was going that way anyway. Like, I think they got rid of the High Elves, the Bretonians, and the Tomb Kings.
Well, the Tomb Kings and the Bretonians are gone. The High Elves are getting wrapped into the Elf army.
Okay.
So it's not like they're gone. They're gone as High Elves, just in the same way that Orcs are gone as Orcs. Now right. They're Orcs.
And that's a shame, because some of the Tomb Kings models are some of the best that Games Workshop made. The Ushabti were fucking awesome.
Yeah, the Ushabti are really good.
The big statues are really cool. They are like the Andro Sphinx and the Gyno Sphinx.
Oh, yeah.
They were really cool. But, hey, whatever.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do about it?
It's just, the Snake Riders were dumb.
Yeah, I like the snakes.
Right, they had the snakes with the halberds, because you could make them as the Snake Riders, or you could make them as snakes with like arms and halberds. The arms and halberd snakes look really cool.
Yeah,
because they look like crazy, like, you know, cobra constructs. The dudes riding the snakes were
cobra,
dumb.
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai. La 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 la.
No, that's Cobra. That's Cobra La. Cobra Kai is the evil dojo from Karate Kid.
I'm sure they would align with Cobra.
Yeah. Well, of course they would align.
They
with Cobra.
They have Cobra in their name.
Oh God!
Behold my triple threat of Cobra. Cobra La and Cobra Kai.
It's like, on one hand you have the Nemesis Enforcer, on the other hand you have Johnny
in his gi. Let's go, Nerdlinger.
Remember when he got illegally kicked in the face, and then
Danielson won?
He still won.
That movie is actually, I watched it. It was obviously meant in a little bit in jest, but it was like talking about how Danielson was the villain of that movie.
Yeah.
But when you really watch it, you're like, he fucking was. Like, he literally antagonized. Like wow.
Yeah.
Like, the dude was a douche. But But he actually, he responded, like, Danielson responds to the guy being a douche with physical violence.
Yeah. I mean, in reality, Daniel LaRusso was a bit of a, I mean, he was a bit of a nerdlinger.
Yeah, he's a nerdlinger, but he's the villain of that
film.
Yeah,
and I kind of like that back in the 80s, it's like, he would respond by, you know, physical violence. It's fine, but they did it in a structured way, you know? Granted, it was an illegal move. Nowadays, it's like, oh, man, you've internalized Daniel LaRusso? Oh, man, he's going to go get his grandpa's gun and bring it to school now. That's what's going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah, it's terrifying, but... Yeah. Unless he's fighting the Nemesis Enforcer, then he's... The Nemesis Enforcer didn't talk. He just, like, grunted.
I think he just
right?
made a noise.
Yeah, he had the wings.
Yeah. I think he just made noise.
Because Globulus was the guy with the snake tail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name was Globulus.
He was voiced by Rocky's trainer from Rocky. Burgess Meredith.
Burgess Meredith, really?
Yeah, he voiced Globulus.
It's been a long time.
It's a terrible movie. It makes no sense. All right. So what other gaming stuff do we have to talk about? We got some time.
I don't know.
How's the Shadows Over Innistrad or whatever it's called?
It's a great Magic set. It's really popular. It's actually one of the most popular sets they've done in a while. Even more so than Battle for Zendikar, which is impressive. But the set overall is better. The set has more good cards. Really well designed. Also, there's been a glut of drama with Wizards of the Coast lately in Magic. So Wizards has a thing, which is it's the Platinum Pro program.
Yeah.
Which is something you can earn by earning enough pro points. And it's a pretty cush deal. If you earn enough pro points in the season, you get this thing where they give you like $2,000 in appearance fees when you show up to tournaments. Each, like, just showing up, it gives you $2,000. You get paid accommodation. Like, it's a very cush deal if you can get it. But like, it's like 29 guys.
Yeah, there's very few people.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people who are going to qualify for it. And Wizards last month, I think, they basically revealed they're gutting the program. They're like this is going to be reduced to this. This is going to be reduced to that. We're not giving this out. We're increasing the prize payouts for Worlds and this. And people, like, just demolished them about it. And one of the biggest gripes, which is totally legitimate, and I agree with, one, Wizards can do whatever they want with the program. And I don't think there's too many people who, like, dispute that. Because it's their program, that's their advertise. Like, they're paying to advertise their game. They want to have pros. And one of the ways to get the same guys playing the games repeatedly is to accommodate their travel. Because they do, you know, it's worldwide. So, like, it's even a guy who's, like, decently successful at Magic, you know, going to a pro tour or going to a Grand Prix, he's probably not going to win.
Yeah.
Even if he's really good. So,
but
like,
you want Daniel LaRusso going to your tournament.
Right.
Because,
you want him there.
Yeah.
And, you know, because people are going to start recognizing him. And the more tournaments you go to, the better you are, the more chance you have of at least placing. Like, if you top eight repeatedly, you can become, like, a household magic name. And people will be like, oh, okay, I know that
household
guy.
Magic name?
Yeah. Well, that's it. I quantified that with magic. Like, if you're into magic, you probably know at least a handful of pros. You know, and then you can build that into a lucrative career of writing articles, basically.
Yeah.
That's the journey of becoming a magic pro. But it's really hard to do on your own dime because, you know, you're like, well, I want to go to Kuala Lumpur. It's kind of expensive, so I'm not going to go because, you know, it's too much money. But Wizards is like, well, we'll pay you. And it basically defers the cost of your flight, essentially.
Yeah.
So,
which is kind of cool.
Right. It's cool. It's awesome that they do it. And it's in the end of the day, like the amount of money Wizards makes a year, it's not a ton. But they didn't realize how many people were going to make platinum when they decided things. So there's a lot more people than they expected. So that's why they're trying.
So they only wanted like probably 20.
That's why they're cutting the program because way more people made it than they thought.
Well, if they're gonna do that, then they should probably just increase.
Well,
yeah.
The story continues. So they want to gut the program, make it less, and the biggest gripe people had, and I completely agree with this, and I'm glad that Wizards did redact. They did go back on this. They said for now we're going to keep it the way it is. They took away their gutting of the program, but the biggest gripe people had is that you pulled the rug out from under us because the season's not even over yet, but it's almost over. So they basically went mid season, and were like, well, you're not going to earn this thing we said you'd earn when the season started.
Oh.
So that's the thing, and that's what people called them out on the most. And they were like, okay, well, like they're like, we're gonna keep it for now. And I think all what it's gonna do is they're gonna keep it, and then when the next season comes, they're gonna just go to the what they wanted to do, where all the numbers are reduced and stuff. Which is, again, like I said, it's fine, but it is bullshit that they tried to do it in the middle
of the season
where like you have guys who've been like spending money, you know, working hard, trying to earn that, you know, earn those like
training and montages, that sort of thing.
Montaging. Yeah. And like, you know, they're like, well, hey,
working hard for the magic.
Yeah. I was like, now I can't do this shit, you know? And like the Hall of Famer fees, like they're reducing, but none of the Hall of Famers give a shit. The Hall of Famer appearance fees are like, they were like too much money anyway. And like most of the Hall of Famers are like, I don't fucking care. Like I'll still go. Cause they get invite. Cause if you make the Hall of Fame, you basically have an open invite to every tournament and you get paid just for showing up.
Yeah. I mean, like, cause I, you know, it's not necessarily magic, but every once in a while, like something pops up on my feed about like e-gamers and like getting passports and stuff like that. And I'm just kind of like, oh, this is kind of silly and ridiculous on multiple levels.
It's a tournament.
Yeah, I know people enjoy it, but it's just like, they get like really into it. I'm just, this is kind of silly to me. I mean,
it's because you're not playing
competitively. I know. I would never, like, even if it's a game I played like relatively competitively, like, I don't know if I'd ever want to travel to play the game. I kind of just like playing the game because it is a game, not necessarily.
Well, you also do minis games, which are like,
it's true.
Like to someone I was talking to one of my customers about it, and he's like, you know, card games beat out minis games so easily because like there's not the massive investment. And by that I mean time, because in the end, card games are more expensive than minis games. Over the years, you have to buy more frequently. You buy less money more frequently with card games.
Yes.
Miniatures games is more money less frequently.
Unless you're like me.
Well, yeah. But again, you have a problem.
True.
So like, there's speaking of problems, I do want to talk to them. I want those Lord of the Rings figures. big deal is like other things. If something sucks in a miniatures game, it is going to take literal years
to fix it. Yeah.
In card games, they fix it fucking fast. Yeah. Like if a card game metagame gets completely like ass fucked, they're like, well, this card's banned now. Like Force of Will is a great example. They basically rotated in advance. So rotation is you have X number of sets that are legal for play, and then you push X number of sets out of the format. You basically mass ban, and then like they go into the next blocks. So Force Will set up to rotate like magic. So there's currently four sets in the Grim block or Grim cluster. And then there are currently three sets in the Alice cluster. The fourth Alice cluster set is not out yet. And what's supposed to be is it's supposed to go to eight sets. And then when the first set comes out of the next cluster after Alice, that rotates the Grim cluster out of the format. So you can no longer use the Grim cluster cards. You can only use Alice in the new one. And then the cards usually rotate into legacy formats. So like in Magic, it is Modern, Legacy, Vintage. And in Force of Will, it's what do they call it? Extended. Whatever.
You could call it whatever thing you want. I'll be like, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
They have the same thing. Where like they have like deeper card pools.
Yeah. It's called Keurig. It's the Keurig format.
Keurig. So one of the the metagame has been like really stagnated and like fucked up for a while with Force Will because one of the rulers is just broke, and using some of the older cards, like they basically made a deck. Like, this is the deck. Like, if you don't play this deck, you are doing yourself a disservice because you're probably just going to lose.
Yeah.
So what they did is, rather than ban the ruler or do any sort of selective bannings, they're just like, we're just rotating early. So they took all of the Grim Cluster cards and basically were like, whoop, they pushed them out. Now you can only use Alice Cluster. So like, that happens. And that's pretty huge. Like, that's kind of unheard of with a card game. But even then, it's still a fix. With a miniatures game, they would have just been like, well, let's keep going. Let's keep going. You know, like,
yeah.
War Machine's a great example. There was, like, I'd say 3 good years of the game being pretty shit. And then, like, now they're finally doing another mark, which is great.
Yeah. Well, I think, I was thinking about this after we talked about last time with the War Machine and the Warmer Hordes, the new mark, is that I tend to think minigames, like, when a new edition comes out or something like that, when a new game comes out and people are playing it, like, you got the variation on lists are huge. And then once all those variations of lists get funneled down to like
two or three
lists, that's when you know you need a new edition. It's like beforehand, you should probably do that about, you know, a little bit before it gets cycled down into those three lists that everyone is playing. But yeah, it could be pretty bad. And speaking of crazy ass miniatures games, did you see the army that your roommate was playing at the local gaming store?
The ponies and trolls.
Yes.
People did not like the ponies, but they liked the trolls.
Is Brian here? I would like to bring him on to see if he won that game.
I'm gonna guess he did.
Yeah.
He probably did.
I was like, huh, that's funny. And then the more I thought about it, the more I got angry at that army.
Dude, it's King's War. Use whatever the fuck you want.
I know, but it's like, at the same time, it's like, if it was anything, not anything else, but I mean, if it was like any sort of gaming property thing or just like done up well, I probably wouldn't have minded.
I would like to immediately throw this out there. Do you know the last winning army for the Warhammer Fantasy?
Yeah, we talked about it before.
It's fucking bug toys.
The bug toys. Yeah.
I mean, it's bug toys.
It's the same thing. I mean, maybe even if the My Little Ponies were painted.
They are painted. Pink and purple.
No. I'm talking like hand-painted by the person who was running it. I probably wouldn't have cared that much. But it's just like, you just took toys and slapped them on a couple pieces.
It's a gag army.
Yeah.
Like, I would not want to see like that. Like, if I was going to do a joke army like that, that's what I would do. Like, I would do something just outrageous.
Because
the people who spend like years working on things like the Monty Python Bretonians, and like I just don't get that. I'm just like, why? Like, that's like the
why?
Yeah, it's like, because if you want to make an army that's a joke, like a literal like baseball ogres or the Monty Python Bretonians or the Hello Kitty Marines or the Hello Kitty Necrons or any of those just gag armies that are just jokes, why would you invest the money and the time in a real expensive hobby and just ruin it with that? If you're gonna do the joke, just do the joke. Like,
I understand.
Brian didn't do it, but he was planning on doing a elemental army for the Clash of Kings, which was going to be literal rocks glued to bases and Woodland Scenic trees glued to bases with googly eyes.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. That's a gag army. Like, that's the amount of time that one should invest in an army that's going to be a literal joke.
I would disagree on the Monty Python one, just because it's still really cool looking and it still works as a medieval army. I mean, the only difference between that and anything else is that your knights are two people and one behind them has coconuts. That's the only difference between that and any other medieval
army.
But
it's very silly.
It's silly, yes. But as we all know, Camelot is a very silly
place. It's a very silly place. Yeah. I mean, it's like way to pick the most played thing in the fucking universe.
Well, I would say you probably see the Alice in Wonderland Bretonian army more than you'd see the Monty Python one.
I'm just saying, it doesn't matter. It's like whatever. That was just an example.
That was another really nicely done army, though.
I don't care if it's nicely done. It's a fucking joke. Like, don't waste the time.
The baseball ogre one not only was a joke, RB, but was also really shittily put together. It was, you know, it's like, I don't mind if you, if it's a, I think that's the difference. I don't mind if it's an expertly crafted joke. If it's expertly crafted and it's like, oh, that's really nice, I don't mind that as much. It's like when they, when it's like,
I find it all offensive.
It's when you take the two parts and smush it together and meet it halfway. That's when it becomes really shitty to me. Like, Hello Kitty Space Marines are generally poorly painted and poorly conceived, smushed together. And that's what offends me. It's just like, if you're going to do this joke, do the joke correctly. Don't just be but like, this ha, all, ha, ha, ha.
It also comes to, like, I hate theme armies.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, if someone was doing, like example, like, you're doing a 40K Space Marine army, and you hand convert and hand sculpt all of your Space Marines to look like Fallout power armor, I hate your army.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even give
you,
a shit.
You would hate
great.
That, yeah.
I don't care if it's great. I fucking hate it. Oh, you made a Brotherhood of Steel Space Marine army. Fuck you. Like, I hate that shit. I think that's the worst. If you want to do a theme army, do a theme of the universe you're in. So, like, you want to do a theme army for, like, vampire counts, and you want to make them undead elves? Bravo. That's great. That's an actual, like, that is a Warhammer army. Because,
but Steve,
you have a vampire lord who's resurrected a bunch of elves. Great.
What about the Stormtrooper Space Marine army? Star Wars.
Also, fuck that. Like, fuck that super hard. Like, fuck that harder than anything. Like, that is literally worse. That's the worst army ever.
Is it literally worse than Hitler?
Literally worse than Donald Trump.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
It's the new thing. Wow. That's the new thing. Yeah. My new thing is Trump. Say you're worse than Trump.
But you support Trump so well, so much.
I do not.
You were such a Trump booster.
I was. You know, it's true. The hairpiece wrangled me in.
Oh, and yeah. Speaking of,
so theme armies, fuck them. I hate them. I hate that shit. Fucking hate that shit. Like, it's the worst. Like, you're already playing in a universe that has a background. If you don't like the background of the universe you're playing in, why the fuck are you playing that game?
It's true.
Like, if you're trying to do a theme, you know, it's just like, if you don't give a fuck about the background, just fucking slap some fucking gray on your Space Marines and be like, I don't know, they're Space Marines.
They're gray Space. They're gray. They're the gray Marines.
They're the gray Marines.
And speaking of the Star Wars, though, it's
fuck Star Wars.
Yeah, that was really loud.
Yeah.
Fantasy Flight announced that they're finally going to do the Force Awakens RPG.
Yeah.
I think no. That's, we can't do that anymore.
Oh, I'm doing it.
Oh, you're doing it. I think it's a little early to kind of delve into the new universe. There's been one fucking movie.
Dude, are you kidding me?
I know. But I mean, my feeling is it is a little early for this. We shouldn't.
Look, it's already nonsensical, okay? Like, the resistance. Why is there a republic and resistance? Well, I don't know.
Besides the point. Besides, it's a little early for that. And it's, you know, you're not. You told me that the Fantasy Flight Star Wars stuff isn't. The system isn't really that good.
No, it's fine. It's just the same.
You just don't like the proprietary dice.
Oh, it does have proprietary dice.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, if you're not a fan of proprietary dice, then you wouldn't want to get into it. But that's a hallmark of Fantasy Flight RPGs.
Well, for me,
minus, oddly enough, their workshop branded ones like Warhammer Wyfrip and I'm sorry, the current Wyfrip does have proprietary dice.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's like they
do.
The
previous one didn't, and then all of the 40K ones had percentage.
Yeah, but they had the previous ones though. Didn't they have like different size dice were important in that one, or is that the new one?
No. The newest Warhammer Fantasy RPG, the most recent one, it's third edition. Really great game, by the way. Like, it's a fan. It's much better than the one that used percentage dice. Like, I will advocate for that game. It is all proprietary dice. So, like, you on your like ability card, it'll have like red, red, green, green, like for the dice. Oh. So you grab the two red, two green dice and you roll them, and then there are symbols, and you match the symbols to see what the skill does.
See, that bothers me. Now, like, a game.
The game is very much about the mechanics,
yeah.
Though.
The thing for me with proprietary dice, I don't mind proprietary dice if you could sub them out for regular dice. Like, for example, Saga has proprietary dice for the game. Like, each die has like six different symbols on them, and the way you roll the dice, and then you pick the symbols and match them up so you can do whatever ability. But you could sub out those symbols for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
okay,
and it doesn't matter. You could use your own dice for it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a convenience system is okay. You know, if you want to do it like that. But yeah, the dice that you like, you have to use them for the other games. Like, you literally have to.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the proprietary fantasy flight dice involve blank sides.
Yeah, they're like D8s and blanks and everything else on there. It's all
and then they have different grades because like there's like the Warhammer one I know for sure uses at least two colors, but like it'll have like a D6. Like let's just say for the sake of argument, it has blue, green, red. They're all D6s, but the blue has one spot missing, the red has two spots missing, and the green has three spots
missing.
When
you need to have a GURPS-style conversion chart to play the game with regular dice, that's when it gets too complicated.
You cannot play them with regular dice.
Maybe I'll say Battletech-level conversion chart.
The system works. It's cool, but like because of they're really built around the dice and stuff, the games are much more about the mechanics than they are about like the role playing.
Yeah, if I'm gonna play Star Wars RPG, I'll stick with the West End.
West End, yeah, sure.
West End girls,
sure.
And so, one last thing. Last week was Little Wars in Chicagoland.
Yeah, did you go?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course I went.
with Little Wars, does that mean they have 10mm fantasy figures?
Old Glory was there. They didn't have them there, but they Old Glory doesn't do fantasy. They do like historical. So. If you wanted, but I mean, if you were doing a Tomb King's army, though, like you could just buy a 10mm Egyptian army and it would work almost 100% the same.
Except they're not Skelebones.
They're not Skelebones, but you could also have, you know, non-Skelebone guys in your Skelebone army, you know?
I mean, when in their original background, there was supposed to be a mixed army, or there is a mixed army described in the original 6th edition Tomb King's book of like, it's an army of like the ancestors fighting with their descendants.
Yeah,
so like it's pretty cool. It's like they have like human because the pharaoh, the tomb king, he's like he like rose up and like there was still people living where his like burial chamber was. So he's like, I am the pharaoh, like Amanthotep, and like the newest ruling pharaoh was like, obviously you should be ruling, so what do you want us to do? And they're just like, okay, we're gonna team up. So then like they just like team up and they have a human and skeleton army at the same time, and I was like, that's fucking cool.
You know, exactly.
Like, and like how cool would that be? Like you could have like a Munisite humans, because they're just like, yeah, no, that skeleton over there who's like stabbing the shit out of your friend, that's my grandpa. I'm gonna fucking kill you.
There you go. And the Ed Spettigue, the great Ed Spettigue, was there.
Oh nice.
Galactic. He has his own 15mm fantasy line.
Really?
Yeah. So I mean, it's bigger than like what we normally would want, but a lot of the monster figures that he did would be 100% perfect for 10 mil. So
that's
like,
awesome.
He has like rock golems that look, steam golems that look like fucking fantastic. That would be awesome in a War Master army.
Sick.
So I wish I could remember the name of it. I'll maybe put it up a link or something like that. And speaking of friends who have stuff for sale now, Rob Hawkins. I didn't know he had like his own little
brand new
fantasy store. Yeah,
brand new.
He's got some like some tombstones and some like
mausoleums. Yeah, looks sick.
Yeah, I guess it's just all this crap you still like. No, Vampire Counts will make a comeback someday. I'm going to keep making this. I'm going to crank him out, man. That's for you, Rob. That's, But yeah, so I guess he just took all the train that he made for it and started selling it.
His mighty heart is breaking. There's no more Vampire Counts.
Just give it up, man. 8th edition, it's gone.
Yep.
He
could play 9th.
Yeah, but he's selling.
9th is gaining ground, I guess.
Yeah, so go to.
Which makes sense.
We should keep like a chart up on our Facebook page of like Age of Sigmar, 9th edition, and like Kings of War, and see like where we think.
I actually think 9th is going to eclipse Kings of War.
You think?
I think so. Uh-huh. Yeah, because I've now that I've played like some of the Kings of War 2nd edition, it's so not fantasy. Like I think a lot of people who like play it, they're going to be like, and they'll probably go back. They'll go to 9th because the game is really simplistic.
Go back to 6th.
Well, I mean, obviously the sane choice is going back to 6th, but you know, no one's doing that.
No.
One of the biggest gripes I have about the game is the inter-army balance is fine. Like, I think the armies are pretty well balanced against one another. Like, I don't think the orcs are more broke than the undead and are more broke than this or that.
No, I think that.
But inside the army, the actual armies themselves, but balance between their choices is atrocious. Like, you, despite what. No, if you're playing Kings of War, don't listen to anyone's opinion except mine right here.
Okay.
You need a flying unit, at least one, if not more. You need to copy paste it a few times. Then you need your some shitty infantry to screen, and then you need good units. Like, you just that game rewards you taking the best stuff multiple times, because bad stuff always sucks because the reward for flank charges and rear charges are more dice, but you're getting more dice of shit. So if I flank charge your, if I front charge your unit with skeletons, I get 20 dice. My block of skeletons, I get 20 dice. I need fives and whatever your, you know, damaging is. So let's say you have an armor of five. So I need fives and fives.
Okay, so that means you're hitting, you're gonna hit on fours. I know you're gonna hit one out of every four times.
Yeah.
So that's 25%. So on 20 dice, that is five dice.
And then I need fives to wound.
Okay, so then you'll maybe once or twice.
Okay. So you're saying two wounds to the front.
Yeah.
Now the flank charge is doubled.
Okay.
So that means let's just go straight up doubling it. Four.
Four.
So that means I do four wounds. And then most of the decent blocks have like a nerve of like 15, 17, which means that if I do four wounds, I can't break your unit.
Yeah.
Even from the flank. From the rear, I would get tripled attacks. So we'll say six. And rear charges are super hard to get in the game. So I do six with my skeletons. So I still can't break your unit. Like, and that's the reward, because there's no combat res. So the reward for charging is more dice. So in other words, it's like you can spend half the points and get a skeleton unit that's really ineffective no matter where it charges. Or you can spend double the points and get a really good unit that if you get a flank charge, you're going to destroy the piss out of what you hit. So taking an army that's got all crushing strength and has flying units to get flanks and, you know, crushing strength from the front that has like big beefy units. Like if my, so my army, my undead army is all ghouls, zombies, and skeletons, and it fucking sucks. It's terrible. It's almost unplayable. And by almost, I mean, it's literally unplayable. So I'm going to be selling it at the Games Plus auction.
There you go.
But if my army was wraiths, mummies, vampires, I'd have a very good army.
Mummies.
Yeah, but I'd have a very good army if that was what I had built. So I just.
So what you're saying is my Bretonian army would be amazing.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I also have flying units. And
yeah, it would probably be good. Yeah. But that's the thing. Like you need to make, like, the game is super hostile if you're not playing a Munchkin-y list. Like, list building is probably 90% of that game.
Yeah.
Like you need to have a very good list, and otherwise, like, you just it's you're gonna lose. Like, you're just gonna lose. There's nothing you can do.
So let's wrap this up because I gotta go pee. Go to planetarbitrary.com for all your Planet Arbitrary needs. You can follow me on Twitter at Planet Arbitrary. You can follow Steve at
Play on Steve
at Play on Steve. Like our Facebook page /GameClassyPodcast. On it we talk about butts and British listeners complain about America.
And West End girls.
And West End girls. Also, you can go to our... You know what? I'm not even going to plug the Reddit anymore because Reddit's such an awful fucking place. But you could go to our YouTube page, Game Classy Podcast on YouTube, where we post our own podcast and the podcast of Comic Book Logic, one of our sister podcasts, where we talk all about comic book movies. Hey, Steve, guess what our next comic book movie we're talking about is going to be?
Captain America Civil War?
Yes!
I knew it! You should really do the 70s Captain America instead.
We did. Oh, well, you did the 90s one, the last.
Oh, rubber ears, baby.
Yeah.
Why does that mask have rubber ears?
It's because of the guy, Matt Salinger, who was playing Captain America. The way that, I guess, whatever material the mask was made out of would, like, irritate his ears because it would cut into the ears. So instead of, like, making the holes bigger or making using better material, they just made rubber ears and put it over it.
I saw the honest trailers for that movie, and I was just like, holy fuck, does that movie look fucking bad.
Oh, it's terrible, but it's so fun to watch. It's like one of those, like... I didn't get quite into it because I was a little drunk on the podcast, but it's one of those movies like Plan 9 from Outer Space where it's so bad that
it's
you're
just, like, such a train wreck. You're like, all right,
I get it. This is fun. It's so bad. It goes circles all the way around to being fun again. I gave it like a B just because I'm like, it's so awful that you can't help but be like, oh, this is fun. I don't mind. And it's only like 90 minutes long. Like, you can't be mad at a movie that's short. I'm going to see Civil War tonight, and it's going to be like a 6-hour movie. I mean, it's literally going to be longer than the real Civil War.
I've been hearing mixed reviews about it.
Everything I've seen is positive, so I'm going to see it for myself.
The people I hear bitching are people who are real big comic fans.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I have to discredit your opinion.
All I care about is the big Jets versus Sharks fight scene that's going to take place in that parking
Although
lot.
I heard Marissa Tomei is playing Aunt May.
Yeah.
Which, after seeing The Wrestler and watching her do the striptease thing, that ain't Aunt May, baby.
You know, we're getting older, Steve. That's the only thing I could say.
I don't know, man. She's pretty hot.
But once again, we're getting older. It's like It's like MILF porn when you're in your 30s, all of a sudden becomes a whole different thing. You're like, that's not a MILF. She's like younger than I am.
I mean, she's just hot in general. Like, well, Aunt May's not supposed to be hot. She's supposed to be like
Well, she's hot to us because we grew up being like...
But that doesn't matter. She's not supposed to... She's supposed to be like a gray-haired old lady going like, Peter, eat your wheat cakes.
But to someone who's like 16 or 17 seeing Marissa Tomei, they might not find her that attractive.
But she's not an old gray-haired woman. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean, just because... She doesn't have to be an old gray-haired woman.
That's Aunt May.
Just it's just like Spider-Man doesn't have to be a white teenage kid.
Well, yeah, but Aunt May is supposed to be like an elderly person.
She doesn't have to be. Nah, don't be ageist.
It's kind of weird.
I think it's weird, too. But
I think it's more ageist to hire the younger person. Isn't that the thing?
I guess, but I don't. It doesn't bother me either way.
I don't know. I just don't want Aunt May to be hot. Because now I'm going to be like...
You're going to have naughty thoughts about Aunt May.
Now I have weird sexual fantasies about ramming her from behind while she's talking about wheat cakes. And I'm just like, God damn it.
To each their own, Steve. To each their own.
I mean, I wanted it to be an elderly Aunt May I'm ramming from behind talking about wheat cakes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Now it's Marissa Tomei. So my sexual fantasies about Aunt May have been ruined.
They've been destroyed.
They've been destroyed by Marissa Tomei's pretty hot body.
So you could... And also, you could listen to the other sister podcast, Pat's Retro Video Game Review Podcast, a.k.a. Play On, which...
Retro Video Game Reviews!
Where Steve and Pat... talk about Pokemon. Pretty much that's what it devolves
Pat
down
doesn't
to.
Talk. Pat doesn't. Pat hates Pokemon.
I hate Pokemon too.
It's awesome.
So.
I love it. I love it. And my favorite conversation still on Play On was when Pat was like ripping apart point and click adventure games, and I was like, "But you like Seventh Guest?
like
it's literally a point and click adventure game."
I don't know.
Yeah,
I like point and click adventure games.
I think they're great. They were the blockbusters in the 90s. Like, yeah, absolutely. Like
they have the Knight of the Tentacle. Indiana Jones and the
all of those point and click adventure games were the like they were the AAA titles.
I'm just thinking of all LucasArts games now that I'm thinking about it.
I mean, they did that was. That was a huge part of their business thing. But I mean, all the, you know, Grim Fandango.
But that was also Lucasfilm?
No, that was not LucasArts.
Yeah, it was.
Was it? Really?
Yeah.
Wow, shit. The Dig.
The Dig wasn't. Oh, maybe The Dig was.
The Dig was, I think The Dig was, well, no, DreamWorks didn't exist. I know The Dig was based on a script from Steven Spielberg, but I don't know if it was made by LucasArts or not. Obviously, Full Throttle's LucasArts. The Day of the Tentacle.
Yeah, The Dig is LucasArts.
King's Quest, Sierra. Yeah, they were a big one. There were a couple other. There was one. I've been trying to remember it, and I fucking. It's been bugging the shit out of
Zork.
Me. Not Zork. Zork's not point and click. Zork's
no,
the text
adventure.
Which are fun. I actually played a.
Big text adventure fan.
I played it when I was years ago. I got really.
When you were a wee lad.
Oh, no, not wee, but I was really sick. Like, and I was like, I had a fever and like I stayed home and I was playing I found a Lovecraft text adventure and it fucked with me. Because like while I was like. You know, I was on cough medicine and shit. Like, I'm fucking reading it, and I'm like, what? And, like, it was a very out, like, trippy experience. And I actually got genuinely, like, I freaked out. I, like, got in my bed, and I was like, fuck this. So, yeah, that actually happened. It was pretty cool. But, yeah, so King's Quest, a bunch of point-and-click adventure games. They were the benchmark of PC games.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. So yeah, you could listen to Play On, aka Pat's Retro Video Game Review Podcast, and you could learn about Pokemon. So Steve, until next time.
I you know what? I had a really good sign off that I forgot, so I'm just gonna go with the classic. May all your hits be crits.
Game classy.